story of a football game mirrors the story of manifest destiny in our country, that you would march across a field, capture territory, hold it and defend it, and move on. That's one of the things that I write about in the book. You know, it's not a coincidence that the founding fathers of the game saw manifest destiny in this country and said, okay, well, we can create a gridiron on a field and we can have territory captured and held, which is unlike soccer or lacrosse or rugby, all of which are mass movement games, where football is more of a methodical, scientific movement game.
Hey, folks, that's ESPN football correspondent Sal Palantonio talking about how football in America and the development of it really parallels the move west by the pioneers. And it's a really great conversation with Sal. He's got a book out, How Football Explains America. And we get into a really, really cool conversation about what it is that the football takes from our culture and vice versa. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. Before we get to that, I'm going to be on the road August 23rd in Schaumburg, Illinois, with my Broadway show, Permission to Speak. Indianapolis the next night, August 24th. I'm going to be in Milwaukee at the Marcus Center in October. Going to be at the Maryland House in Annapolis, Maryland, November 23rd. All these are my Broadway show, plus I've got stand-up dates coming and more Broadway shows going into 2025. So please check it out. Grab some tickets. Love to see you guys. And before we get to the interview, so I go drive a certain way some days and I go through this one intersection and there's a homeless guy who's always at the intersection, you know, with a sign and asking for stuff when people stop. And so I, you know, normally give him something, you know, like, you know, food. Occasionally money, but mainly food. And, so this one day I didn't really have any like great food. I didn't have like a bagel or muffin or anything, but I did have a Kind bar, you know? And by the way, the guy's in rough shape. I mean, he's a severe drug addict. He's emaciated. He told me, you know, he can't get off crack. He's always got a pint in his hand. He's smoking cigarettes, chain smoking. So, you know, he's in a bad way. So I roll the window down. I hand him the Kind bar and he looks at it and he goes, oh, thanks, but I got a peanut allergy. Okay. All right. Peanuts. That's your biggest problem right now. And he gave me the bar back. And his crack pipe. We smoked crack together. No, I just couldn't believe he said that. And he was sincere. Anyway, enjoy Sal Palantonio. Really cool conversation with him. Hope to see you guys out on the road. And thanks for checking out the podcast. Enjoy, Sal. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Joining me this week, someone I'm a huge fan of, who I've been watching and reading for a long time. He's an Emmy award-winning sports journalist, national correspondent for ESPN. He covers the NFL for SportsCenter, Sunday NFL Countdown, ESPN Radio, hosts ESPN's NFL Matchup, a terrific show on Sunday mornings. And he has a great book out, How Football Explains America. Sal Palantonio, great to have you on the show, Sal.
Thank you, Paul.
It's really a terrific book and a really interesting take on football through a really unique lens. What sort of struck you initially to want to write the book and how did you sort of come up with this idea? Because the book sort of takes a look at how football, you draw parallels between football and pop culture and jazz and also in the military, but also sort of how those areas influence football and vice versa, just to kind of give people a little quick summary. But sort of how did this come about? Because it's really, really a unique take on looking at football.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. That's very nice of you to talk about the book. I have been working on it on and off basically almost 40 years now. I really wanted to set out to find out why and how the game was created and how and why it evolved in the late 1800s into the game that became so vital to so much of America. You know, we inherited rugby and soccer but we decided to reject both of those sports. So in the book, I talk about why that transition took place and who was behind it. Amos Alonzo Stagg and others who transitioned the game of rugby and soccer to football in America. So I really thought that there were some really great history books of football, but none really delved into the how and why it was created and why it became popular. And then the cultural influences, the African-American influence is huge, and the military influence on the game is huge, and the television and gambling and fantasy football, you know, have allowed the game to really grow in a way that no one foresaw.
And yeah, I mean, it's really become, in my mind, sort of overtaken baseball as the America's pastime. And I found it interesting sort of when you talk about, it's kind of stuck out for me, like why soccer, rugby never really took hold, even lacrosse, which is a game invented by the Native Americans. Why do you think that is? And I know we continue to make efforts to have America become more of a soccer nation, but why do you think that those two particular sports never took hold here?
Scoring, yeah. I think, is number one. You know, Americans like scoring. They do.
Right.
They always have.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is that the story of a football game mirrors the story of manifest destiny in our country. That you would march across a field, capture territory, hold it, and defend it, and move on. That's one of the things that I write about in the book. You know, it's not a coincidence that the founding fathers of the game saw manifest destiny in this country and said, okay, well, we can create a gridiron on a field, and we can have territory captured and held, which is unlike soccer or lacrosse or rugby,
right,
all of which are mass movement games, where football is more of a methodical, scientific movement game.
Yeah, that was one of the areas that I wanted to probe with you a little bit more, because I thought that parallel and that sort of inspiration for this, it never dawned on me, but when you talk about it, you know, you talk about the pioneers and the cowboys creating the game that resembled their march across the continent. And also that, to me, tied into the sort of military aspect that you hit on in the book as well. You know, there's a real lineage there with West Point and, you know, some, you know, major figures in the sports, Lombardi, Parcells, Belichick. Talk a little bit about sort of that sort of connection to the military and to West Point and how that's sort of expanded the game or influenced the game.
Yeah, I think it starts with Red Blake at West Point. You know, Army and West Point, and then to a lesser degree, but also then equally later on, the Naval Academy really embraced the game through the Army-Navy game. And those, a lot of successful coaches came out of Army. Parcells, Lombardi. You know, you go back over the years, and guys who have been successful coaches have come out of the Army culture. Of discipline, attention to detail, importance of teamwork. You know, I'm a veteran and I understand exactly those influences in my life and the lives of my children. I have all girls, so I have no football players. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But, it's really important for people to understand just how much military culture. And then, you know, I think it's, you know, we talk a whole lot about the influences of Jackie Robinson and other African-American players on the game of baseball in the late 40s and 50s, Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, and later to extent all those great players in the 60s, Lou Brock and Bob Gibson, and they had a tremendous impact on baseball. But don't forget the Browns and the L.A. Rams. Bringing in African-American players in the late 40s and 50s really influenced the game of football. And, of course, Jim Brown was a tremendous influence. You got to go all the way back to the 20s. You know, Fritz Pollard,
yeah,
which is, he's the namesake of the African American Coaches Alliance in the National Football League. He was the head coach of the Akron Pros in the 20s. Yeah. And Jim Thorpe, Native American. He was the head coach and star player of the Canton Bulldogs. And they played in the first NFL championship game against one another, coach player. So the influences of African Americans and Native Americans on the game of football are profound and go all the way back to the origins of the game.
Yeah, and you think about Jim Brown, sort of, he was very active in the civil rights, obviously, movement. And Jackie Robinson, obviously, was a pioneer, but did it in a little bit more passive way through his play, whereas Jim was more vocal off the field. And sometimes I think people forget that, you know, there's that iconic picture of him with Muhammad Ali and Kareem. And speaking of not just civil rights, but you also talk about sort of entertainment, show business. There's this really interesting parallel you tie into jazz and football. And it never dawned on me until, you know, sort of you delved into this, like that, you know, there's an improvisational aspect to jazz and there is to football as well. And while both require structure as a sort of its grounding place, from that, you then go off and create some beautiful plays or beautiful music and explore that a little bit for folks and sort of that parallel there.
Yeah, I think you just said it pretty succinctly, Paul. You know, so there's in football, unlike soccer, there's incredible composition, orchestration. And then from there, through the personality and talent of the players, you have an improvisation that's hard to predict and often hard to defend. And I think that's what really makes the game of football different. You have orchestration and composition, and then from there you improvise off the scale. You know,
yeah.
You go from Duke Ellington to Thelonious Monk.
Yeah, right.
You know, football. You know, football is. If you think of Duke Ellington as Kyle Shanahan, then Thelonious Monk would be Debo Samuel. You know, looking for the cracks in the diatonic scale in order to make the beautiful music of football.
You got to stop using big words on me, diatonics. Come on, man. I'm not that smart.
Oh, no, you know what the diatonic scale is. If you have any interest in music, you know what
And
that was the beauty of Thelonious Monk, is he was always looking for those unique cracks in the scale.
Yeah. And,
you know, just to listen to any of his songs, like, you know, Well, You Needn't, yeah, that's a really good example of Monk creating jazz music that became iconic because he was trying to find those different melodies.
Mm. Do you think in football today, so to be a great coach, you've got to have that ability to think improvisationally and to let your players improvise? I mean, you know, you have Reed with Mahomes, and in the day, I guess you had Belichick. I'm a Patriots fan. So Belichick with Brady and trusting Brady to do what he needed to do out there because he's such a master at the game. Do you think that that's essential, like, to be a great coach these days?
Absolutely. It's given Andy Reid a second life.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Mahomes' ability to make plays off script is what has transformed Kansas City Chiefs from contender to champion.
Yeah.
You know, and Brady, if you're a Patriots fan, you know that Brady was brilliant at the line of scrimmage. So his ability to make plays off script wasn't necessarily with his legs, but with two things: his intellect pre-snap, ability to recognize what the defense was, and his quick release accuracy. Mm-hmm. I've been to many, many training camps with Tom Brady where if a player wasn't exactly in the right spot, they'd get an earful from number 12, not Belichick.
Yeah.
Brady, you know, Brady knew where each guy was supposed to be at all times. So there's no real magic. There's more engineering to Brady's success. I've always said that. Brady was an incredible pre-snap engineer. And he had subtle signals to his receivers. Option routes, so important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy does this, you do that. This guy does that, you do this. That's why you look at, you know, how he had success with guys like Welker and Edelman.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, I was just going to say, do you think Edelman, with any other, nothing against Edelman, but, you know, comes out of Kent, you know, really a quarterback and develops into an amazing receiver. Do you think he develops without a Brady? I know, obviously, Belichick, but because of Brady, that's what got me so frustrated about what they did with him. And I had Jeff Benedict on the show. Jeff's a friend of mine. You know, he wrote Dynasty, and obviously they turned it into an Apple series, miniseries. But they kept talking about, you know, losing his physical ability. And it's like, that brain that he developed out there was way more valuable than anything else. And they were getting rid of a coach, a second head coach when they got rid of him. And then he showed that, you know, he still had life in him with Tampa. But do you think an Edelman develops without somebody like Brady? I don't think so. Not the way he did. But what do you think?
I think you're onto something there. Clearly, Edelman has tremendous talent and ability, and, you know, former quarterback in college, so he was super smart about the game. So he played the position from the standpoint of the quarterback. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Amendola was successful because of Brady. Gronk was successful because of Brady.
Yeah.
You know, Gronk's going to go in the Hall of Fame. Brady's going to go in the Hall of Fame. I would argue that Edelman deserves to be in the conversation, you know, that I'm one of the 46 enshrinement selectors for the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. So I've always believed that Patriots dynasty is underrepresented in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We're starting to get people in, Richard Seymour, Ty Law. But I would say Teddy Bruschi deserves to be in. I would say Willie McGinnis deserves to be in the conversation. A serious conversation needs to be had about Willie McGinnis. Still holds a record for sacks in the postseason. Teddy Bruschi was the middle linebacker on 3 Super Bowl champions. Julian Edelman, just look at his numbers. Hall of Fame worthy conversation about Edelman, for sure, 100%.
Is it because sort of there's a backlash to being a dynasty like that, that it's sort of, it's harder to, in some weird, odd way, the more you win, the harder it is to get some guys in? Like, you know, our culture loves, our culture loves winners up to a point, and then they kind of look back. There's a backlash to being too much of a winner, maybe, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think part of it was people just thought Brady and Belichick were, you know, the architects of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody else was along for the ride. But we know that's not true.
Yeah. You also talk about in the book, like, the quarterback position, and how there's not really another position in sports that sort of has its own place in the conversation. Why is that? Is it because there's so much has to go through that person for the game to execute well?
Yeah. You look at it, all other sports, there's really nothing like it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. It's because I wanted to explore how the quarterback position was created, why it was created, and why it mirrored American society. Nothing else like it in sports anywhere in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever try to get your girls playing football when they were younger?
Well, we threw it around a little bit on the beach, but not really. They were, we try to invest in tennis and golf, something they could play for their whole lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing that with my son now, golfing. Yeah. It's great.
That's good.
Yeah. It's great. Well, listen, Sal, the book is terrific, and your work is just phenomenal on ESPN and across the board there. Everything you do is just so well informed. And the book is How Football Explains America. Sal Palantoni, it's great to have you on, and best of luck going forward, buddy.
Hey, Paul, I really appreciate your interest in me and your interest in How Football Explains America. It's obvious you read the book, that you're interested in it, and please have me on again.
Absolutely. Love to. There you go. That's Sal Palantonio. You can see me on the road going to Schaumburg, Illinois, Indianapolis, Marcus Center in Milwaukee, the Maryland House in Annapolis, Maryland. I'm going to be in the Dr. Phillips Center in Orlando, January. Westerly, I'm going to be at the Westerly, Rhode Island, United Theater, return performance in March 2025. So paulmercurio.com for tickets. Hope you guys can come see me, and appreciate you guys supporting the podcast. See you next week, everybody.